big and burly men who roll the trucks along. Better listen, you'll be thankful when you hear my song.
Oh, a little Dick Curless right there. You gotta like that. 22 minutes after 4 o'clock here on Downtown, a Wednesday program. On the Pulse, WZON, Rich Kimble, Brian Stackpole with you, and joined in studio by two notable local authors who have done a great job of capturing some of the biggest names in the history of the Queen City, including Dick Curless. Dick Shaw, Brian Swartz join us in studio. Their new book is called Legendary Locals of Bangor. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
It's our pleasure to be here.
This is a true honor.
Even though you guys went the long way.
That's okay.
They went out to the Broadway studios.
I got here about, 7 minutes ago. I'm a native. I grew up
in Brewer.
So I know where all the construction
Dick knows
is.
The shortcuts. That's the key right there.
Yeah, I almost know where all the red lights are. Not all, but in the slow pokes and that kind of thing.
I'm just skimming through this a little bit to look through. It's such a wonderful collection. And Brian, you guys have covered a fair amount of history in this.
Yes, we have. We've covered people associated with Bangor from 1525 to 2014. 1525 was the Spanish explorer, albeit a Portuguese sailor, Estevan Gomez, who came up the Penobscot River and dropped anchor offshore here. And there's the Compass Rose Monument to him down on the Kenuskeg Stream right here in Bangor. It was dedicated by some Italian-Americans from Massachusetts some years ago. He was the first one that we could trace down.
Right. And you've divided this into 8 chapters, 8 categories: Queen City pioneers, military achievers, household names, writers and artists, entertainment and sports, feeding the hungry, doing their jobs, and a ripe old age. And you narrowed it down, Dick, to about 115 people.
115 people.
That couldn't have been easy.
It wasn't easy. You know, before Brian joined the project, a little over a year ago, Brian, I sat at my kitchen table. It's kind of low-tech, but, you know, sometimes simplicity is the best. I had Post-it notes all over the table, and it's kind of driving myself crazy. But there were hundreds and hundreds of people that could have been in the book. But,
well, I'm looking through the entertainment and sports section. We heard Dick Curless coming out
Dick
of the break.
Curless.
Who
what
achieved
a great baritone voice, the baron of country music.
And such great success in the 1960s, part of the Buck Owens tour.
Yeah.
A number of big hit records, and I had the opportunity to interview him on a number of occasions. Couldn't find a nicer guy.
Yeah,
than Dick
very
Curless.
Nice man. Very nice man. Yeah, he came back and was in Nashville for years. Got kind of burned out there, I guess.
Yeah.
Came back, lived well, Ohio Street, had a train. Remember that?
That's right, yes.
He wanted to sit there and, you know, while away the hours writing music.
And people forget how big country music still is around here. But back in its heyday, in the 50s and 60s, a lot of these local artists had their own radio shows and even TV shows. Hal Lone Pine,
yeah, they did.
For those of a certain age. But you've also got the great yodeling Slim Clark in here.
Yeah, that was country before it was cool, as Barbara Mandrell.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, honestly, it was a select audience, but I don't think they could have imagined waterfront concerts. Can you?
No.
15,000 people, 16,000 seeing Kenny Chesney. And
from the sports world, I'm looking at the football coach when I was in high school at Bangor, Jerry Hodge, who just passed away. This week, I think, is the anniversary of his passing. But one of the greats of all time.
Yes. Yep.
From the entertainment world, my local hero, a couple of my local heroes, the one who's on the wall here in the studio, Eddie Driscoll, and also our friend George Hale in the book, too.
Yeah, I grew up listening to Eddie Driscoll do his afternoon live program, you know, kids' entertainment. It was fantastic. Mason Mutty introduced us to one of the characters. It was just an incredible person.
Now, did George stop talking at all, or did you just finally have to leave?
Well, we were on a deadline. Something about live radio, you know. He was very moved by it, you know. He pretended he was on, page 50-something. That's not a rating of people, but I think he sort of pretended maybe to be in Barrett, but I think truly he was moved, and it couldn't happen to a nicer person.
George is great.
He's a great person.
He got me started in the business, and I know, I won't say it on the air, but I know how old George is, and he's still the best there is around after all these years.
His voice is still just as pure. And
What's also interesting about the book are some of the characters that have been such a part of the community that maybe we're not always in the public eye, but behind the scenes, and I'm looking at one right now, Frank Soucy Sr. over at Frank's Bakery, Skip Wrist
Coffee Pot. I mean, those people are right at the top of the list. There was the first stack of my Post-it notes. These have to run. It was Eddie Driscoll and the Soucy family, Skip Wrist, the coffee pot man, a lovable character, and he went out at the top of his game. He said, I'm tired, you know. What, 70-something?
Yeah.
Just when he ended it, he ended it. He sold his last sandwich. People lined up. How good is that?
Oh, it's wonderful. We're talking with Dick Shaw, Brian Swartz. The book is called Legendary Locals of Bangor. Available pretty much everywhere in the area where you can buy books.
Books a Million, Bookmarks, The Briar Patch, available online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books a Million. And I understand it may be going into some other shops around here in the next few weeks.
As you look at all these memorable characters from Bangor, Brian, is there a common theme that kind of ties all these people together? Is there something that that makes someone a legendary local from Bangor?
I found from the 19th century, about 1825 to, I'd say, the 1870s, 1880s, there was a strong core of civic-minded citizens. Primarily, I guess we would consider them to be the professional class, merchants, lawyers, doctors, and such, who, when they were not practicing their particular trade, would be filling different roles in city government, even going to represent Bangor in the legislature, representing Maine in Congress. One, of course, an attorney, Hannibal Hamlin, was vice president for 4 years. There just seemed to be a common theme of, even coming into the 20th century, if people who enjoyed living here and they worked to make sure it was an interesting place to live.
I'm looking through a Marshall Frankel, man, Mr. Bangor, the mayor of Main
Mr.
Street.
Mr. Bangor shoveling. You know, the merchants downtown, a lot of people don't know, were responsible for the upkeep of the sidewalks in front of their store. And here he is, always very well-dressed.
Oh.
And
Shep Hurd from Dakin Sporting Goods.
Yeah, the Brady Gang shootout is one of my... There's ways of getting things into the book without actually having dead bodies in the streets.
So. Absolutely.
It's the man that ratted them out in 1937.
What's also interesting, too, Dick, and I talk about this with my students, too, at Brewer High School, is the fact that Bangor is not a very big city, a little over 30,000 people, and yet from Hannibal Hamlin to Bill Cohen to people who've been successful in the arts, somehow Bangor has been able to produce people that have had a big impact on the national stage that would far exceed what you'd expect of a town of this size.
It's amazing. It goes all the way back to the wealth of the lumber years, wouldn't you say, Brian?
Yes.
In 1869, I wasn't actually around back then, but we had a centennial and some, let's call him a mucky muck, got up and said, Bangor's going to be bigger than San Francisco, bigger than Chicago. Well, it, obviously it isn't, you know, but it's big in many other ways. And so, but I don't think we ever really got away from 150 years later of dreaming that we're going to be big. We're going to be tomorrow's going to be bigger than today, and we have a big casino and a big.
Well, yeah, and it's
we
been,
have the BSO, and we got the BIA, and we've always got this thing going with Boston that goes way back to when the been, boats used to come up from Boston. And
it's an interesting transformation too, from the days when Bangor was the lumber capital of the world, and we don't have that manufacturing base that we had in the past. But as we've seen, as you've mentioned, with the transformation of the waterfront now, Bangor has become an arts center, not just for eastern Maine, but the state and a big part of northern New England as well.
Bangor has the retail clout reaches well into the Maritimes. We are a destination city for people from Prince Edward Island, New Brunswick, parts of Nova Scotia. We have the mall, lower prices for clothing, gasoline, anything the Canadians want to buy here. We have the casino for entertainment with waterfront concerts. But we, as you said, just said, we also have now with the arts and music, we have that same reach going very far. And that's it probably multiplies the city's population by three or four times.
Well, I can't wait to sit down and read this in its entirety. It looks absolutely wonderful. The book is entitled Legendary Locals of Bangor, and you've got 115 of them down. Will there be more additions down the road?
Let's hope so. I don't know yet, but we're hoping that there will be.
How many editions deep do you think you'd have to get before I make the cut? No, I'm just kidding.
I was prepared for people to say, where's my family? I went into this, didn't you, Brian? You joined it later, but I was prepared for, you know, to have some answers for people. You know, I mean, it's a book. You can't add it pages onto a book. It's kind of finite number.
We developed our initial list early last June. And right down to the deadline of December 2nd, I believe we were still winnowing names from the list.
Yes.
It's great. Yeah. Just flipping through the pages and bringing back so many memories. Bud Levitt, Vic Runce of the Bangor Daily News.
And I knew those people very well. I worked at the BDN, and Brian did, knew Bud Levitt. And nothing like knowing people. People make a community, you know. And people
absolutely.
And I have a lot of old pictures that came courtesy of with Bangor Historical Society, Bangor Public Library.
And the Bangor Daily News, too.
In my collection. You have some, too, from your collection.
I was pleased to meet the people from the 1850s to about the 1940s of whom I'd never heard.
Mm.
Lost legends, you could almost call them. People who had made major differences in the city in their particular time frames, lifetimes.
Who was the biggest surprise or the person that maybe you didn't know much about that you were fascinated by as you
Hannibal
got
Hamlin. Finished?
Really?
His statue downtown and what I've researched about him in the past, he seems to be a conservative, dyed-in-the-wool Republican. He's from the town of Paris, Maine. He married a woman named Sarah with roots from the same town. They had five children, lived in Hamden. She contracted tuberculosis, died in 1855. After a respectable mourning period, Hannibal went back to her birthplace home in Paris and married her half-sister, 26 years younger than him, 20 years younger than her, and basically kept the children, you know, his five existing children. Now their new mother was also their aunt.
Wow.
So he was quite the old fox, too.
Well, and the interesting thing also about Hamlin, the vice president under Lincoln, trying to reach out to the Confederate states, dropped him in favor of Andrew Johnson in the election of 1864. And if I remember right, his headstone mentions mayor of Bangor and some of his other positions, but does not mention the fact that he was vice president of the United States.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I really don't. He was such a class act, though. I mean, he didn't go around complaining about it, did he?
No. He actually served in the Bangor Militia Company throughout the Civil War.
Right.
Yeah.
And at one point, he was mobilized for about a month to go down and help guard Fort McCleary down in Kittery, overlooking the entrance to Portsmouth Harbor.
While he was vice president.
Yeah. Vice president. He was a private. He was the cook while he was there. And he was promoted to corporal.
And he was in Bangor a good part of the time. And he never even met, I understand, Abraham Lincoln until after the election of 1860. Wow. It wasn't like today where I think probably Joe Biden had met.
Yeah, I'm guessing they had a conversation.
Yes. I mean, they were both senators. I think they probably knew each other fairly well before Biden was nabbed to be vice president. But
a lot of great stories in this book. Legendary Locals of Bangor, Richard Shaw, Brian Swartz. Thank you both so much for coming in. Good luck with the book.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
4:30.